I remember how to work PowerPoint. Yes. Right. Good afternoon, everybody. What we're going to start with is, we hope, a logical order of how we've arrived at, or, well, how we've got as far as we have so far on the voyage of creating an infrastructure for the UK. So we thought we'd start with the end users and the fundamental requirements of what people want from access management. So that's why I'm on first. And just to give you a quick bit of background, if you don't know what the London School of Economics is, or it's London, England, not London, Ontario, we're a fairly well-known university. Technically, we're actually part of the University of London, but that's a very virtual organisation. It doesn't really exist, and its component schools are really rivals with each other rather than collaborators most of the time. And one of the things that's peculiar about the LSE is that it specialises in the social sciences, so it doesn't do any of those subjects that require large bits of complicated equipment that use a lot of electricity and things. We have a relatively small population. We usually size our directory population as about 10,000 people, staff, students and researchers, and they do a lot of remote working, and they want to do much more remote working than they do already. And we subscribe, because of our research orientation, we subscribe to an unusually large number of online sources and still lots and lots of paper sources that haven't discovered being online yet. That's one of the reasons why our library claims to be the largest that specialises in the social sciences. It still contains about 4 million print items. And it's also a national resource and partly an international resource, and we get a lot of visiting researchers. We get more people who are not members of the LSE in our directory through the doors than the number of people we get who are members of the institution coming through our doors to use our library services. And I don't think we yet have an accurate way of counting the number of people who come through our electronic doors and use our resources online. So getting down to what our users want in terms of access management, and this is based on information gathered from them and project-based work we've done over a number of years now. They want single sign-on, and I'm not talking about single sign-on to all of our internal systems and integrating Oracle and Active Directory and things. Of course they want that, but they also want that to extend to all of the out-of-domain resources that are contracted by us, licensed by us for their access, but are not under our direct control. So all of the electronic journals, all of the online databases and things that are outside of our control that we buy in or we subscribe to from governments all over the world and so on, they want access to all of those. And where the access is not just public, they don't want to have to remember a lot of passwords and a lot of other access procedures to get to them. They want access from anywhere. We have one not very well known publicly econometrics researcher who consults with both Microsoft and Intel, and has said to me at least once, well, he wants to be able to get to all of the e-journals he needs to consult while he's on Bill's private plane somewhere over the Pacific Rim, because he needs access to that. I don't know if he can get it yet, but that's a function of Bill's plane. And also in particular, they want improved privacy. So they want they are concerned about privacy of personal data. We don't do hard computer science, but we do have a Department of Information Systems that tends to do research into things like the politics of information, the politics of online systems, and they advise our government and other governments about how to do things like privacy legislation. And so we have a significant number of users who are particularly professionally concerned about information privacy of their personal information. And again, because we're research focused, we have a lot of people who are concerned about the privacy of whatever they're pursuing as research, because it's a competitive world and they don't want other people to know what they're doing and do it first. In terms of us as an institution providing services to these end users, what do we want? We want to be able to give our providers of licensed resources better assurances that we're keeping to our conditions, our terms of licenses. We want to provide privacy protection for users because we believe the same things they believe, and we don't want any of them to sue us because lots of them are lawyers too. And we want the least possible hassle for supporting all of our users, the ones on campus, the ones off campus. We want to be able to do finer grain authorization control so we know and manage who has access to what, and I guess that's all motherhood and apple pie. And we want to be able to have better control than we do now over access, the access we provide to visiting users. So it's a variety of people who come through our doors that aren't our members. Why have we chosen to use Shibboleth as our main technology platform for access to these out-of-domain resources? Looking at the costs and benefits of this, that the costs that we've now shelled out and swallowed, if you like, are that we need to get our directory services in good shape, and we spent quite a long, painful period doing that, but we're there now. We need to install and maintain the middleware. We were the first people to install outside of the boundaries of the US to install Shibboleth in, I can't remember what version now, 0 point something or the other. So we've gone through that process. The benefits that we've started to discover, and I think not fully discovered yet, are that certainly it reduces our overheads in supporting password and user ID. there is no difference, at the moment less difference, I think, but that's because we're in transition, in the instructions for access that we need to give users, whether they're on campus or off campus, it doesn't matter anymore. We have started to exercise more flexible control over who has access to what, and we've just started to think about and explore how we can use that to fine-tune our license conditions and how much we pay for some of the expensive resources. And we're also using it in an increasing way for access control to internal resources, most of which is based on roles, so somebody's a student of LSE, and our maintenance of things like access control lists for that is now eliminated. We don't have to do that anymore, and that's a particular saving. Where the labour, depending on whether you're an English speaker or not, just to, if you didn't go to Michael Getty's session or one of the other sessions that are talking about Shibboleth here, we're not going to go into the details of it, none of us are, but basically the benefit of doing something like this using Shibboleth or another devolved access management technology is that authentication is done by the identity provider, which in our case is somebody like a university. The authorization is done by a service provider, typically an online publisher, and ideally it's based on a role that's already information that's in our directory. So the role of student with an affiliation of lse.ac.uk defines whether somebody's covered by a license or not. As I said, we're also exploring how we can use Shibboleth as a service provider. And here are a couple of examples. One of the things we did early on was the first claimed example of transatlantic access management using Shibboleth, which was a couple of years back now, in a collaboration we did with Columbia University in New York. An internal resource that's LSE members only. This is just a screenshot example of our exam papers collection. Our academics don't like exposing our exam paper collection outside of the institution or outside of members of the institution, because mostly I think because they want to hide the fact that they recycle the same exam papers year after year. That's what it looked like when I looked at it. So I'm just going to do a quick run through with a series of screenshots to show you what Shibboleth Access looks like in the way we have it set up. Again, if you haven't seen this, this is the hard way. So a user can go to the URL of a resource, and so they see something like this. This is a resource hosted by Edina, which is one of our publicly funded data service providers that's participated in the Shibboleth pilots in the UK. They can choose to log in using Shibboleth if they're at an enabled institution. They see this thing called the Where Are You From service. They have to choose which institution they're from. They get the authentication prompt from their own institutional service, and it's one of my colleagues logging in. They see this bit of gobbledygook, which I think we should hide, but at the moment we don't. We show them that bit of gory detail, and then they get to where they want to be. Alternatively, as a library, which anyway is maintaining directories of stuff that users can go to, we thought, well, why not hide all of that, navigational complexity, and just give them a link which embeds all that. So we can give them a link like the one circled that goes to Science Direct. And they click that, they get to the authentication. They don't see any of the where are you from. They don't need to say they're from LSE because we know that. And they get to Science Direct, and Science Direct knows that they've been authenticated by LSE, but it doesn't know who they are. What I want to finish with is one of the other issues we've dealt with, which is having been through so much pain and work ourselves, then how much noise do we make about this to users? What do we tell the users about the magic that's going on under the counter? The conclusion we came to is we tell them nothing. Because they don't want to know. And the reasons for that are that we don't have to give them new usernames and passwords anymore, and we don't have to run the service to maintain that. We are in transition from our legacy service, I suppose, of Athens, which is a national service that's still running. So one of the things we had to do was go through loads of online information and printed leaflets and information that we gave users and take out all sorts of references to the old usernames and passwords that they did used to have to use to access stuff. And that was quite an arduous process. The other thing we recognise is, of course, the world is changing gradually. We can't do this overnight. We now tell users, all of the information we publish says to users that something that we're branding as your LSE login is the default access for everything, but we give them we give them information saying that on the web and printed guides, but we also give them online help for the gradually diminishing collection of things to which it's not the access. And by gradually, I mean that will probably take a period of several years before we get all of the resources that we want to shibboleized or appearing to be shibboleized one way or another. So we give them something they can access with the same credentials, which will tell them for each individual what all the passwords are to get to different resources that are not yet shibboleized. And you can see it's a relatively small list. And just in case we've got any curious people, any computer scientists who, or conspiracy theorists who think that we're doing something under the counter, we do have an internal website. We put links on the bottom of those explanatory pages saying, well, this is what we're doing. Actually, we've done a lot of work and we are proud of it. And so here are the full gory details if you really want them. This is mostly a resource aimed at our librarians because they're actually taking the pain of the process of gradually switching access via older systems, older access management systems, over to access via shibboleth. So the thing you can see, the progress bar thing at the top of that page there, is about how far we've got, and it's generated by the list of things that they can get to with shibboleth and things that they can get to with other methods. Those are the my specific links. Now I'm going to hand over to Ross. Ross is the service provider end of what I've just mentioned, so he's that view. Thanks.